It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris, in for Kevin Gavin. Schools are closing. The stock market is down 20% from less than a month ago. City leaders say they're no longer traveling. And most of our major sports teams say they'll no longer play in front of fans, if they play at all. News about how the coronavirus is affecting us in Allegheny County is coming at us rapid fire. Here to help us make sense of it all are a small battery of WESA reporters. Ariel Worthy covers local government, Bill O'Driscoll handles arts and culture, and Katie Blackley has focused lately on how schools and universities are adjusting course. Good morning, friends.
Good morning. Morning,
Megan.
We should say, as of this moment, there have been no confirmed cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the novel coronavirus in the Allegheny County area, but officials are planning for that eventuality. Ariel, I want to start with you. You worked from the city-county building yesterday. What was the mood from our leaders?
Yeah, good morning. They were kind of beyond caution. They were kind of on high alert at that point. One thing they kept emphasizing was, if you are sick, please stay home. Practice social distancing. So that was really their biggest message yesterday.
Yeah, and the city officially canceled all events with 50 or more people. That includes this weekend's annual St. Patrick's Day parade. We should note that came 2 days after the entire nation of Ireland canceled their celebrations. What are folks saying? Is that a necessary step, a step too far? What was the reaction?
Well, the parade committee, they said they were disappointed, but they also understood why it was the step that they took. A lot of people, I haven't heard from a whole lot of people yet, but the city actually announced yesterday that they are hoping to limit occupancy rates in certain, like in bars and restaurants and clubs. I haven't heard from any business owners about that yet, but they said they're going to strictly enforce that on Saturday.
Yeah, more could be coming. It sounds like our public safety department, too, is being pretty realistic about their expectations for Saturday. St. Patty's, of course, is a huge moneymaker for restaurants and bars. Was anybody talking about that bottom line, that part of the conversation?
The public safety director, Wendell Hisrick, he really talked about that. You know, he said, unfortunately, this is a weekend where those kinds of germs could get spread. That's why they're really focusing on lowering the occupancy rate. They said if a bar or restaurant is one person over, they are shutting them down for the evening. So they're taking it very seriously at this point.
There was a city press release as well that talked about kissing, as I recall.
Yeah, they really want people to stay about 3 to 6 feet away from each other while they're out in public. So just to really avoid any kind of touch like that.
Bill?
Are they actually asking bars and restaurants to let in fewer people than they normally would, or just stick to their occupancy permit?
They're asking them to lower them, but they are also mandating, like, the current occupancy rate. They are strictly enforcing it this weekend. They said, you know, you could get shut down at any time if you're over, but this weekend in particular, they're definitely going to be looking at that.
Which is something they wouldn't normally do on St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Right, yeah, they can maybe get away with it on St. Patrick's Day weekend, but not this year.
I love it. Questions all around. I'm Megan Harris, joined by my WESA colleagues. We're talking about what we know right now about preparations from various organizations in the city as the coronavirus spreads. Again, no cases in Allegheny County just yet. Katie Blackley, I want to turn to you. You've spent most of this week updating WESA's live blog, reporting about how different organizations are trying to make these accommodations on the fly. Let's start with universities. Big news yesterday, yes?
Yeah, well, just to go to the live blog thing, that's something that WESA is trying to do. We want to be a place where people come and can be updated and can be notified and get the best and most up-to-date information.
Absolutely, and that's WESA.fm.
Right, and it's right at the top. You can just click live blog. It has that update to the universities. So yesterday we heard that Pitt, I believe, was the first one. The University of Pittsburgh was going to shut down in-person classes and extend their spring break for a week, which is a move that a lot of universities around the country are making right now. It complicates things a little bit. And so shortly afterward, I should just say Duquesne and CMU, Carnegie Mellon University, did that as well. So, like, everybody in the city is doing it.
And Penn State as well. I think their current plan is to resume on April 6th, but that's TBD.
Yeah, and so they're going to do some online classes the best that they can. So I talked to Pitt Chancellor Patrick Gallagher, who had to answer some tough questions because there are seniors in college who are just about to graduate and they're feeling kind of anxious and they want to wrap this up in a really nice and beautiful package. Like, you've been going to Pitt for 4 years. You go to this campus for a reason. He kept saying, the thing is, universities are like cruise ships without the water. That was the favorite thing that he said, that because they're so socially close. Like, social distancing is hard in a university setting.
And Oakland is an incredibly tight-knit community for our college campuses.
Yeah, so they're going to do their best. They're going to postpone some classes, do a lot of online, like, remote learning situations. But for some situations, I mean, if it's a music class, like, how do you teach a piano class remotely? And how do you do a chemistry lab remotely? It's going to be a case-by-case basis is what they were really emphasizing.
And Pittsburgh Public Schools released a plan yesterday as well. They represent about 23,000 students, plus teachers, admin, staff. For now, business as usual, it sounds like, with an exception.
For the most part, yeah. They released this really long plan, and most of it was just like, what's the coronavirus? Wash your hands, like, do all this stuff, kids. And I asked them, you know, what do the kids know about this? And they're like, well, basically, it's just, we're not implementing it necessarily into the curriculum because we don't want to scare the kids.
Right.
Colfax Elementary School in Squirrel Hill did close today because there was a potential exposure, just out of an abundance of caution. They were really emphasizing abundance of caution. There is one teacher employee that I know of that's self-quarantined because their family member traveled to Washington, D.C. recently, and they just want to make sure.
The State Secretary of Education, Pedro Rivera, spoke on this last week. He said schools should be considering contingency plans for those remote lessons, maybe repurposing unused snow days, that he and other state leaders would be thinking about what to do if any necessary closures extend into end of year testing time or cut into the required number of classroom hours that students are required to have to finish a full year of schooling. Katie, Pittsburgh Public is the biggest district in our region, but by no means the only one. More than 100 in the WESA listening area alone. How are we as an organization trying to learn about the plans from all these other districts and places?
Well, you're right. We have a lot of school districts in our listening area. So I honestly haven't reached out to a lot of others right now. I'm just pretty much focused on Pittsburgh Public.
But they're welcome to reach out to us.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I imagine that they're all going to pretty much do the same thing. They're all going by CDC guidelines and communicating constantly with the State Department of Health and the Allegheny County Health Department.
Right. Bill, of course, you cover our city's robust arts community. We're coming into spring, traditionally that time of the year when Pittsburghers come out of hiding for festivals and those other meet points. Do we have any guidance yet from our bigger institutions?
Well, to take an example, it's very much these institutions are handling it individually. One of the biggest arts presenters in the city is the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, which runs the Benedum Center and the Byam downtown. Right now, they're doing the same thing. No performances have been canceled yet from anybody, really, that I've heard of. But they are saying, again, if you're sick, please stay home. They're doing more cleaning of surfaces, common surfaces that people would touch. Other theaters have also said the same thing, like City Theater, for instance. A couple interesting developments. A City of Asylum, which runs Alphabet City on the north side, not canceling anything, but they are live streaming their events now, their literary readings and so forth, so that you don't have to go there to experience it.
Okay.
So similar things like that. Symphony, no changes. People are just being more careful, cleaning stuff more, basically.
And a lot of our local patrons of the arts tend to be older folks, too. Is anyone talking about that, worried about, you know, who we're exposing to some of these things?
Nobody's really specifically mentioned that. I think everyone's aware of it. Some things that you go to, there's a lot of gray hairs there, including mine in some cases. I think it's just be careful. If you don't feel good, go home. If you're really worried about it, stay home.
We touched on restaurants. Katie, you reported last week that elected leaders were hoping to encourage folks to venture back into our community's Chinese restaurants. Coronavirus, of course, first appeared in December in Wuhan, China. COVID-19 has since affected many thousands of people there, but not in our community. Any update on what you've heard for how it's affecting some of those restaurants?
I have not heard an update, but I'll just tell you briefly about this press conference because it was very different.
There was a lot of food there.
There was a lot of food. Well, I walked in and there's like a podium, which is great. That's how press conferences go. And then they bring out this like whole thing of food and all the elected officials are just eating it. And it's about dinner time. And the reporters are just like, well, I'm pretty hungry now.
But if you haven't seen it, Katie posted videos on her Twitter account.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fun. Everybody looks very awkward. They're trying their best to eat very politely in a video.
Well, they're all pretty good with chopsticks, which I give them props for.
But it's family style. So you really got to be ready.
And this is just an effort to show unity, to show like, hey, like this is our community too, especially in the community of Squirrel Hill, where there are a lot of Asian families and a lot of Asian restaurants in the East End generally. They're more than 90. And they were saying, you know, we are losing 20 to 40% of our businesses over this just like misplaced fear, essentially. I haven't heard an update. I imagine it's going the same way, especially now that it's getting closer. People just like aren't going out as much. So, I mean, go eat some Chinese food. I don't know.
And a brand new update from our state health department. We are now up to 19 presumed positive cases. Only two confirmed by the CDC. They're the only ones that can fully confirm a test right now. So that's 21 total. Bill, pivoting back, we just at the beginning of the Lenten, the fish fry season. What sorts of questions are you interested in asking about how our city's hospitality industry may try to mitigate people's reticence to gather at restaurants or other places in mass?
Yeah, I guess, you know, what are they doing? What are they telling people? Like, are they taking extra precautions in the kitchen? I mean, we assume that they're following rules anyway, right, all the time, all year round. We're hoping that they do. But I think people are worried just about being in common spaces with other people. And if you're supposed to do social distancing, how do you square that with going out to any kind of event, right?
Ariel, are there any planned updates from the city, at least at this point this morning?
I haven't seen for this morning, but yesterday Peduto did announce that the city, they are looking for extra space. They anticipate that neighboring communities will, you know, come to Pittsburgh when this outbreak does get here. So they're looking for places for extra hospital beds and just for extra equipment and personnel. He did not specify where they're looking, but they definitely are planning for that now.
We'll stay tuned to you all. Ariel Worthy, Bill O'Driscoll, and Katie Blackley are reporters for WESA. Thanks so much for all your good work.
Thanks, Megan.
And you can stay abreast of all the latest news on COVID-19 through that live blog on our website at WESA.FM. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Are you ready for some numbers? The State Department of Health says 175 people in Pennsylvania have been tested for COVID-19. Of those, 100 have come back negative, 59 are pending, and now 19 are presumed positive. So those numbers are changing by the moment. We know those figures in part because of reporters like Cynthia Fernandez of Spotlight PA. They're a statewide newsroom reporting on Pennsylvania government. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
Much of your reporting the last couple of weeks has centered on what the public is being told. And some of that, these best practices, they're drawing on an unexpected source. Tell us about this law from 1955.
Well, the state's public health law is very, very old. It was created basically in the heyday of syphilis and typhoid. And it was created to make sure that patients with those diseases weren't stigmatized. And there were a lot of issues with the law, so much so that in 2007, the state Senate made a resolution to make sure that the Joint State Committee would study that law and make recommendations, and they did. In 2013, they produced two very comprehensive reports with their recommendations on how to make the language clearer and, you know, define certain terms. So in case that there was an outbreak, we wouldn't have these issues that we're having now. But no updated law was ever passed in 2013 or since.
What kinds of information are the most important to have, especially for you as a reporter?
As a reporter, yeah, I don't want to know the patient's name or their address. I would just like to know their age and which municipality they live in and how they contracted that disease. Was it through traveling to another state? And that kind of stuff. I'd also like to know if they were attending big conferences. Now, for public health officials in counties, they should have a lot more information. And what we're seeing is that the State Department is not even giving some local health departments and local boards the information of who is sick in their municipality.
Your story posted on Wednesday, the state has since added those figures. Again, that was at 175 tests at that point. I believe that number has gone up now. None have been presumed positive yet in southwestern Pennsylvania. What does that tell you, Cynthia, that sudden addition to the state health website?
Well, listen, I mean, here's the thing. A lot of other states were telling us the most basic information, like how many samples they had tested in total and how many people were under investigation, how many people were quarantined. I wanted to know that big round number of how many samples were tested in total to see how the state lab was performing. That was what was most important to me. And yeah, she did post it, and we see that we have 100, almost 200 people under investigation. We see how many they've tested in total, which is important information to have when we're mitigating this disease, once it grows more than it already has.
Are other states more forthcoming with this information than maybe Pennsylvania has been so far?
Like New York, Governor Cuomo has released a lot of information, like how many people they're monitoring, in New York City, how many people have tested. They've been very forthcoming, and they do have a more robust, State Department of Health and a bigger budget, so maybe that has to do with it. We don't know what's going on, basically.
Just a few seconds left. It's beginning to feel like a daily briefing. Governor Tom Wolf and Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine are talking to the press again today at noon. Again, briefly, what will you be listening for?
Updated testing equipment, updated capacity, new numbers of who's been tested, and if there has been confirmed community spread.
Cynthia Fernandez is a reporter for Spotlight PA. Cynthia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Megan Harris. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Kylie Kaczynski. Still ahead on The Confluence. A gallery in Garfield is calling on kids to imagine what they want for themselves and their community in the future, and to channel those dreams into art. Plus, debuting this weekend is a new show by the Pittsburgh Ballet Theatre. It's a world premiere for a veteran choreographer, but also the first time an African-American woman has created a dance for the 51-year-old troupe. What conversations would you like to hear on The Confluence? Send your suggestions to confluence@wesa.fm. You can find conversations, stories, and more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence.
In the early 1970s, the Allman Brothers Band were getting frustrated making records in a studio. They had a hard time keeping their songs short and felt that the studio environment failed to capture a certain spark that became apparent when the group graced the stage. The band decided their next album would be a live one, and they planned to record it over a few nights at Bill Graham's Fillmore East in New York City, the first of which took place on this day in 1971. The Allman Brothers' onstage magic was sufficiently captured, and At Fillmore East became an artistic and commercial breakthrough for the band. For 91.3 WYEP, I'm Joey Spihar.
Donald Trump may be a close ally to the oil industry, but that's nothing new for U.S. presidents. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Reed Frazier. President Trump has tried to slash dozens of regulations affecting the oil industry and now might push for a bailout for American fracking companies as oil prices tank. But helping the oil industry isn't a new tactic for American presidents. It's been central policy for basically every Western leader since the 19th century. That's the story told by writer Mathieu Ozanneau in his book, Oil, Power, and War.
When you talk about power, whether it's political power or corporation power, there is a compact relationship with the ability to have the proper sources of energy.
For our podcast, Trump on Earth, I spoke with Ozanneau, who's executive director of the Shift Project, a French think tank which advocates for a post-carbon economy. He said maintaining access to oil from Saudi Arabia and other countries still drives American foreign policy, including our many conflicts in the Middle East. And he said it's unclear whether the American fracking boom, which has boosted domestic production, will change that.
I would argue that this is not going to last because the thirst of oil all around the world remains, and it remains very high in the U.S. It's very hard to be certain that the shale oil that is booming right now is going to remain for this, for several decades. Oil is an exhaustible resource. When you look at China, not many people know that, but China is a very large oil producer, but it has passed its so-called peak oil, and its production is declining. So we fought many wars for access to oil when oil was plentiful. You have to wonder what's going to happen when oil will become, and it will become, a scarce resource.
I wonder how much the shale revolution has changed this paradigm, this story. It sounds like, from what you're telling me, you don't think it's changed all that much.
That's the big question. Conventional oil production, which brings to the market the 3/4 of the production, it has passed its historical peak production. It's in decline. Conventional oil production has been on a plateau for 10 years now, and its production is slowly, slowly decreasing. And you have many, many regions in the world that are in decline. In Pennsylvania, you have to remember that before shale gas started to boom, what, 10 years ago? A century ago, the place of birth of the whole U.S. oil industry was Pennsylvania, conventional oil production. That production peaked in the late 19th century, and that oil has been exhausted for a long time. So you have to remember that and zoom back on the proper historical scale. You have this boom that's been going on for 10 years. Is it going to last 10 more years? There are many doubts about that issue that don't come from environmentalists, but that come from observers of the industry, geologists, for instance. Some of the main sources regarding the oil industry that say that the shale oil boom is going to be on a plateau and level off as of next year.
Mathieu Ozano is the author of Oil, Power, and War, A Dark History. For more, go to TrumpOnEarth.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Reed Frazier.
WYEP celebrates Women's History Month throughout March. Today, find out more about Miho Hattori. She's best known as the vocalist for the electronic hip-hop group Chibomato. But Miho Hattori also originated the voice of Noodle in the animated band Gorillaz, contributing backing vocals to the hit 19-2000, which was featured in commercials and video games. In 1993, Hattori moved to New York City, joining the punk band Leto Lichi, where she met multi-instrumentalist Yuka Honda. The pair formed Chibomato in 1994, releasing 3 albums with a variety of collaborators. Miho Hattori's credits include working with many innovative artists, including Beastie Boys, and she recorded a Brazilian-influenced album with Beck guitarist Smokey Hormel. To hear full songs from all our featured artists for Women's History Month, go to WYEP.org/woman.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. A gallery and community arts organization in Garfield is calling on kids and teens to imagine what they want for themselves and for their city overall. Thomas Agnew is the co-founder of that group. The nonprofit Boom Concepts was founded in 2014 to support creativity and networking among those who weren't finding an outlet through traditional means. Thomas, welcome back to The Confluence.
I'm glad to be back.
So with this new show that you've imagined, Our Future, it's for kids. What sort of art are you imagining? Is it a specific medium?
They have to have, you know, a certain size. But, you know, the students are, you know, children there are welcome to kind of create whatever they see fit as far as, you know, what it is that they would like to see in their future and also Pittsburgh's future. You know, we want people to get creative with it. Whether it's painting, whether it's collage, whether, you know, any type of medium. So, you know, we're looking forward to that.
Boom hosts exhibitions, screenings, shows. You even have meetings in your community space. What will the ultimate selections in this Our Future show, will they be on display there as well?
Yeah, so they'll all be on display in April for First Friday, our Unblurred series that we've been doing, I mean, ever since we've opened the doors. So all of the artwork will be placed on the walls. We'll clear the space out, paint the walls, and we'll post all the work that we can on all the wall space that we have available, you know, for children and their families to come and check out the work. And then from there, we'll be taking it down to Art All Night at the end of the month to also just kind of further display this work to another crowd. And hopefully, you know, we have some people who want to buy the art from the children. I think that'll also be cool, too. It's like you get to create artwork and, you know, get paid for that artwork. I think it's something that'll be, you know, cool for them. But, you know, ultimately, we just kind of want to get that on display for them to, you know, really see something and really feel uplifted about that.
Yeah, for a lot of kids, this has got to be the first time they will have seen their art anywhere but, like, you know, mom and daddy's fridge.
Yeah, the fridge or, you know, in art class, anything like that. You know, I think they take great joy in that.
Submissions are welcome through Sunday. Have you seen any of them yet? Anything that you can tease? Anything you're excited about?
I have not seen the submissions yet. And it's really just, I don't think it's really the submissions are due, but I believe, you know, the submission forms for parents to sign up their children and have, you know, what it is that they want to do. Because, you know, we want to make sure that the adults are also involved, informed, that their children are bringing artwork, you know, to the space to have on display. You know, it's kind of like when you go on a field trip, you got to have that form signed in so you can go. So, you know, and everybody is participating, you know. I think that brings a different form, too. It's like, oh, yeah, I could, you know, work with my child on, you know, some artwork if they're not doing it in class or they're not doing it as a part of the program. So
especially if the guardian doesn't necessarily have that background in art themselves, they can bring their child in to work with somebody who does.
Yeah, if they want to, definitely. I mean, we're open for that. And, you know, definitely some of the adults, they'll come by and say thank you for, you know, working with my child. I've been trying to find a resource. You guys have helped us out, you know, so it's great to hear that.
I'm Megan Harris talking to Thomas Agnew. He's the co-founder of Boom Concepts. So in addition to this teen art project, I understand Boom is also celebrating another milestone this week, your 6th anniversary. The space itself, if you've never been in it, can be kind of kinetic. It's this enormous network of artists, entrepreneurs, mentors. So what does it mean to you then to have built all of that up since day one?
It's kind of crazy. I actually, you know, when I think about it, it's like, it all happened naturally. As I always tell the story, you know, me and DS just kind of needed a workspace of our own. And we wanted to go work at, you know, a co-working space or, you know, some of these other spaces. And, you know, some we didn't really feel comfortable with and some we just kind of wanted to build our own thing. We've seen, you know, I think he's seen different businesses work a certain way. I've seen businesses work a certain way. And, you know, we kind of came together with similar ideas. And, you know, the community kind of came together to help us out, get this going. And then, like I said, after the space actually opened, because we didn't have a name for it, you know, people were like, oh, you guys have a space now? What are you doing? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? And it kind of put it into perspective of the needs of the community. And so, you know, we kind of opened up our business plan of how we wanted to utilize the space. And so, you know, once we started doing events, once we started doing exhibitions, you know, the interest level of the community started raising really high and we started getting a lot more traffic, a lot more questions, a lot more people interested in what we have going on. You know, you get all types of different people from the community that come out and want to just see what's going on and want to be involved and want to support. So, you know, I'm forever thankful for all the people who have come by and supported us.
How important is that support, you know, from the people that come into the space themselves, from the people that are involved in the Boom Network, or even those who feel like maybe they haven't found it in other venues?
It just feels good. It feels good for people to talk about the space, you know, to other people and what it's done for them. You know, we always collect quotes from different people who have worked in the space, and it's just always so great to look at what people have said about us. Or we'll see pictures of us being utilized in, you know, different, you know, projections. People are at meetings, they're talking about us. You know, I think our collaborative efforts with other people also shows, like, a great respect for what we do. And, you know, I think we're always happy, you know, when people want to come by and share, you know, something positive or say something positive or, you know, want us connect. You know, also, too, you know, they do a great job at connecting us with other people. I feel like we just take it a day at a time. You know, we haven't really been thinking about like 5-10 years down the road because I feel like the environment changes all the time and the needs of the community changes all the time. So, you know, what we try to do is just try to make sure that we have whatever resources available for the people who come by and ask for that. And, you know, we do our best at, you know, making sure we keep our doors open and being a safe space for people. You know, it's not just about, you know, throwing these events, throwing this. You know, a lot of people like to just come by Boom because it's comfortable for them. You know, we try to make sure that it's open for all types of people to come in. We don't try to shut people out, or we don't really try to tell people they can't make this type of art. We try to keep it open. And I think that openness also keeps people coming back and wanting to support more.
When people find you, what do they tell you they've been missing, the other places they've tried?
I think the realness. I mean, I think the whole staff, we're just like super real. You know, we're not very judgmental. We're not telling people, oh, this doesn't look this, or this is not art, or you can't do this. You know, we're always trying to find a way to help the person do what they're speaking to us about, or they're trying to create with the exhibition, or they're trying to curate, or they're trying to make a connection with somebody, or they're trying to find a job. You know, we're trying to make sure that we have all these resources available for them. And I think that is a big difference maker versus how they feel with some other organizations where they don't really feel that connection. I think our connections are real genuine, and people appreciate that.
Are you hoping that shows like the Our Future program can pull more kids into that network?
Definitely. I mean, the children, it'll open their eyes. I mean, they always ask questions. I mean, we have children that come by. It's funny because it's like, you know, you have Unblur where, you know, you're expecting a lot of, you know, older individuals, but you have younger individuals who come in and see that work. And then it's great. You know, we've only been open for 6 years, but it's great to see maybe 2-3 years down the line when they're older, they're coming in again with like ideas, or how can we do this? How can we do that? So it's great to inspire that younger generation to show them like, hey, you can do this. You know, I remember when I was younger, I definitely didn't have a Boom or, you know, anybody that was talking to me about how art can play a role in my life. You know, I was blessed with like one person who was like, hey, you should go to school here and do this. And that's how I ended up in Pittsburgh. So, you know, to be able to have this open space for somebody to come in for free, just to check out off the street anytime, you know, that's a blessing.
Is it humbling for you to look at that and to be able to tell a young person or older person, we do care what you have to say. We care what story you have to tell.
Definitely. I mean, everybody should at least be able to tell what's on their mind and what they believe in and, you know, get it out in some type of way. So, you know, if they can get it out with art, cool. If they can get it out with words, cool. You know, we want to make sure that we have this type of platform open for people to get it out any way that they can. You know, not all the stuff that comes through Boom is strictly art. And that's what makes it cool, because it's like that openness for people to want to come in from Pitt or CMU or, you know, GPAC or, you know, some of these other places that want to utilize the space to bring people in to get information, you know, is super great.
And if folks want to help celebrate that 6th anniversary, how can they get in touch?
They can get in touch with us. They can visit the website, boomuniverse.co. You can come to Boom Concepts at 5139 Penn Avenue. We'll be also having different events from March all the way through the end of June. Juneteenth, you know, last year was our day that we had the proclamation with the mayor. So we will be doing programming on Juneteenth again this year. You know, stop by different events. Stop by Unblur. We have, you know, Unblur every first Friday. The children's exhibition will be April 3rd. So, you know, that'll also be a great time to come and check out some of the artwork that the children and some of the young adults are, you know, creating.
Boom Concepts is looking for 2D art from the city's pre-K through 12th graders. Those submissions or intent to submit are due on Sunday and should reflect their hopes for themselves and for their city. Thomas Agnew is the co-founder of Boom Concepts. Thomas, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. A local choreographer is the first African-American woman to create a work for the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll has the story behind Stacy Pearl's Skin and Saltwater.
More than a year ago, Stacy Pearl got a call from the executive director of Pittsburgh Ballet Theater, or PBT.
You know, in my head, I'm thinking, is he for real?
Pearl is a 20-year veteran of the local dance scene, but it was still a shock when she was asked to create a new work for PBT.
And then I realized, I'm doing a piece for the ballet. This is amazing.
PBT is the city's biggest and most prestigious dance troupe, known for classics like Swan Lake and The Nutcracker. Pearl has a background in ballet, but her own company, Stacey Pearl Dance Productions, showcases original works in an eclectic contemporary style. Moreover, Pearl is Black, and the ballet world remains overwhelmingly white. She says she felt some pressure.
I get a lot of love from our community about the African-American community and other about me having this position, and it's sometimes a little bit overwhelming.
Rehearsals began last fall in PBT's spacious studios lined with big mirrors.
Okay, 5, 6, 7, 8, we go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 5.
Pearl was working with a large cast, nearly 20 dancers. Some are as young as 18, but they've been training for years to perfect their command of ballet's traditional vocabulary of precise movements. One of Pearl's challenges is to get them moving in her style, which is mostly not classical ballet.
And boogie down, all the way down to the ground. Yes, we go.
Pearl employs slumped shoulders, undulating spines, even elements of breakdancing.
It's very close to the ground and very grounded, but also free, like it's very flowy.
Grace Rookstuhl is a PBT dancer featured in the show.
Our torso goes horizontal all the time. Like, it's bending all the way over. You don't do that in ballet very often.
Pearl was inspired by the 1619 Project, last year's New York Times series about slavery and its legacy. Skin and Saltwater concerns an African man and woman who jump overboard to avoid slavery.
I'm trying to imagine or escape into a different space with what was actually happening during the Middle Passage.
But it's not a work of documentary realism.
I'm using all of that to build some part of it and then build it out into this magical place.
Other works of Pearl's honor jazz singer and activist Abby Lincoln and Black science fiction writer Octavia Butler. Most of the dancers in Pearl's own company have been Black. At PBT, just 2 of 32 dancers are Black. This is an issue throughout American ballet. In 2018, 21 companies, including PBT, signed on to the Equity Project, a partnership to increase the presence of Black dancers in ballet. Meanwhile, Pearl is telling a story about the African-American experience with mostly white dancers. But PBT believes in the show. After its premiere at the August Wilson Center, Skin and Saltwater will be one of 4 works it tours to the prestigious Joyce Theater in New York City. Terrence Orr is PBT's longtime artistic director.
I thought this was going to be a ballet of substance and something being said. That was really very good for being at the August Wilson Center and about the Black community.
Pearl acknowledges that who the dancers are matters.
I would have to present it differently if it were on my own company or on a black ballet company.
But she says she never hesitated to work with PBT's dancers.
This story is an American story, and these issues are American issues, and we should all be able to tell them. And I feel like I took it as a learning experience for myself, but also for them.
Skin and Saltwater is one of 4 short works on the program titled Here and Now. There are 7 performances at the August Wilson Center starting Friday, March 20th. I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time on The Confluence, Pittsburgh City Council is considering a plan to create a racial equity commission to eliminate disparities and to remedy past injustices, which could include reparations. We'll talk with one of the architects of the proposal, Councillor Daniel Lavelle. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. I'm Megan Harris, the editor and producer of The Confluence. Kevin Gavin will be back with you on Monday. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.